As you'll be able to tell from the laughter between us, Father Jeffrey Ott and I have known each other for a long time. 25 years ago now, we were classmates at Aquinas Institute of Theology, both pursuing our Masters of Divinity. Father Jeffrey Ott is now pastor of Our Lady of Lourdes Church, referred to as the Mother Church of African American Catholics in the Archdiocese of Atlanta, across the street from the Martin Luther King Jr. National Historical Park, and only a block away from the historic Ebenezer Baptist Church where King preached. Jeffrey's a member of the St. Martin de Porres province of the Order of Preachers, better known as the Dominicans. Listen, and you'll learn more about Jeffrey's deep affinity for St. Martin de Porres. But you'll also learn more about the struggles that many ministers face when trying to lift up the dignity of the whole body of Christ, while also acknowledging power differentials within that body.
So what I've been doing is interviewing people about kind of their spiritual journey as a person of power. And I know that that language might resonate with you and might just sound strange. So partly it comes out of my own experience. I think not when we were students at Aquinas, but then when I switched onto the faculty, like I still thought of myself as like, I still think of myself as a student of the world. And I'm like the David in every story. And I'm out there, you know, fighting for justice on this or that, standing up. And all of a sudden I began to realize when I started teaching that, oh, in other people's eyes, I'm not David any longer. Like in their version of the story, I'm Goliath. So I'm wondering, like, is there a moment for you where you kind of came to that awareness that the way that you thought of yourself and the way other people thought of you might be too different?
Well, I definitely have that experience of thinking of myself as kind of like, I'm just part of the team. I'll try to think of a moment. This would have happened at Xavier when I was starting campus ministry there. You know, I got ordained in 2002. I started at Xavier the fall of 2003. You know, and I'm like, hi, my name is Jeffrey. I'm the new chaplain. Oh, Father Ott. And I'm like, you could call me Father Jeffrey. Father Ott, this is Mrs. So-and-so. And this is Mrs., you know, Dr., you know. Okay. And I kept saying, but you can call me Jeffrey or Father Jeffrey. We're on the team together. And Father Ott, you're not getting it. You know, it's like I had this image of myself as being kind of equal. We're all, you know, baptized into this church and we have this equality in a baptism. And that's what the books say. But the people say a little different, you know, and acted differently. And they see me totally different than I see myself with them.
You know, that what I've come to recognize is sometimes the way that we were formed, it was almost like there's going to be this mutuality in ministry. You really are equals. You really are going to be partners. I have come to recognize a little bit that maybe there are some dangers to that too. Because even if in my own imagination, I don't have power in the situation, if in the other person's imagination, I do, I might accidentally weight the conversation in a particular direction. Like my voice might carry more power and I'm not even aware of the fact that it's doing so. I don't know if that's been part of your experience too. Like when you come to the table, you come as just Jeffrey. But everybody else still in their minds is thinking like, well, if Father said this, then we have to, like, I can't go against what he said. Have you ever?
Yeah, I've encountered that. It's such a fascinating topic. I wanted to say that to you too. And I'm so glad that you're writing on it. My parish is predominantly Black. There are like, I'd say 30% is white. And I find like cultural difference is as well. I think with my white parishioners, they seem more readily able to adopt the Jeffrey first name basis thing than my Black parishioners. I think there's a respect. And it is really important in the Black culture. I was taught not to call an older person or a person who is above you, for lack of a better term, by their first name. That just was not allowed. I either had to put Miss Sally or Miss Jane or Miss Teresa or whoever.
What do you see behind that for yourself? Like, it's respect, but it sounds like underneath it, there's a little bit of a fear for you that maybe that people aren't seeing themselves as peers, or that you might end up having expectations placed on you that you don't feel comfortable with. Like, what about it makes you a little bit scared?
Yeah.
About it.
Like a lot of that, all of that. The priest part of me, the pastor part of me wants my parishioners to understand their dignity as baptized people in the church, that they have a stake in the church. And it's not about how much money they give. It's not about active and involved they are. You know, I'd love for them to understand that. And I thought that by my not being a traditional kind of like Roman collar wearing priest, that I could inculcate that into them and form them in that way. To some extent, I think that's true. So Toni Morrison, her good friend was Dr. Ruth Simmons, who became the first Black president of Brown University, probably the first Black president of an Ivy League. When they interviewed Toni Morrison about that historic occasion, she said that Dr. Ruth Simmons knows what power is for. And she knows that power is to be used for others, you know, not over others. You know, I don't have the exact quote, but basically that those words, power is used for others. And that just stayed with me. It still is seminal for me. And that's what Jesus was about. He used his position as a male in the Jewish culture to speak to the other males, you know, in the Jewish culture, to bring in those people who were, you know, marginalized and left out. And so how can I use my power then for others? It's difficult because, like you, I don't see myself as a powerful person. That's still kind of rankles a little bit. You know, I'm just not comfortable.
Well, when you're describing it, it sounds to me like, on one hand, it's like, we don't want to abuse the power that we have, which I hear you being really cautious about. And it's trying to figure out, and sometimes people need us to exercise power. And we don't want to, on the other side, not exercise the power that we have been entrusted with by the community, you know, in your case, by ordination. But it's like walking in that in-between space. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes hard to know, how to live in there. And you mentioned to you that one of the models that you draw on is Jesus. What from the tradition grounds you in that middle zone of using your power as appropriate, not overusing it or abusing it? How do you navigate that?
I did the Catholic Leadership Institute, Good Leaders, Good Shepherd. Uh-huh. I got my certificate. One of the things that I learned there is that my leadership of the congregation is based in Jesus as the pastor. I'm sure I learned it at Aquinas too, but it was kind of brought home to me there. And that really helps me because, you know, when I feel inadequate, I turn to Jesus. I'm like, listen, you're the one who's in charge here, and I'm just trying to do the best I can, and you need to do something. I have a little talk with Jesus. And it's also good to remind my parishioners every now and then. I am pastor, yes, but Jesus is ultimately in charge. And so let us all be reminded of that. In our tradition, we call Jesus brother Jesus, you know?
That's great. And for you also, it sounds like you've experienced Jesus as brother.
Yeah. He's, I think,
next to you.
Yeah, just with me. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favorite saint that you look to at all that for you that you think this person really exercised it well, or a mentor model?
For me, Martin de Porres is one of my fave people. Love his humility. I love his intuitive sense of how to help and assist people, how to help people to heal. I aspire to his, to have that kind of connection with God that he had, this unself-consciousness that I see in his life.
I remember when I was reading about him recently, I think I'd always, as a kid, pictured him as just like this brother at the door with mice and a broom. Mm. But he was really like running a whole healthcare system. I mean, there was a lot more to his story than what the one-page books would have you know.
Believe, yeah. Yeah, he had a lot going on. You know, he was healing a lot of people and taking care of business. He was managing a household, even if it was just the door, you know. He had a responsibility that he took very seriously. He used his training to help heal people.
I can see why he's a great model. I can see why you belong to his province.
Yeah.
Is there something that you kind of wish that you had? If you're like, if I had, because is this the first time you've served as pastor? Like, you've been campus minister in a lot of places, but is this the first time?
Pastor, yeah. First time, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is there something you kind of wish that as a pastor you had in your skill toolbox that you think would help you to exercise power better in that role?
I wish that I was more assertive to confront when need be, in a way that is respectful, but very clear. And I have that in me. I know that I have that in me.
I mean, so in some ways, on one hand, you know that you have a, quote, position of power that has a lot of esteem in people's eyes. And the experience internally is, you know, there's also a lot of powerlessness in that space. Are there situations that you would say, I still feel really powerless before this? Or like, this is something I wish I could change and I couldn't. Maybe it's what you just named. But what do you say to yourself in situations where you still realize, like, this is bigger than me, or this is not in my control? Are there messages from the tradition that you draw on there, too, when you're feeling powerless?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if there are any particular messages. I think what I look at is that this is a long story and a long history. My little part in it, I can do. There are lots of ways that are beyond my comprehension in this moment that this situation can be resolved. I just kind of coming to acceptance, I guess, of my limitations. Oftentimes I just say to people, you know, I wish I could do this differently. And sometimes that helps and sometimes that doesn't. You know, sometimes that makes it worse. You know, I have appreciated the wisdom of brother priests who have been pastors longer than I have and whose priesthood I respect and admire. And that has helped me because there have been situations where I have thought that I was powerless, but there was really something that I could do that might be helpful. And they have helped me to see that. When there's nothing to do that I can do further than I've already done, it's a moment to pray. Realize that there's a bigger picture and I just can't see it all. None of us knows how it all shake out.
That's huge. I mean, in some ways it's what I'm listening to is almost like it's going back to Jesus as brother again, like that he also was in so many situations he couldn't fix necessarily in the big, huge scheme of things.
Like absolutely. And
isolated people. But
I was going to say, you know, there's that situation where, you know, he was asked by the mother of James and John, can you do something, Jesus? You know, get my boys right up there, you know, when you come into your glory. And he was like, look, that's not mine to do. I answer to higher authorities. And it's like, okay, if Jesus can't do it, well, yeah. Or he's not going, that's not his role to play.
Jeffrey, it just strikes me in speaking with you, of many of the people I've spoken with, you live at really a crux of, you are a priest and you are ordained. And at the same time, as a whole country, we've become more and more aware of ways in which being Black puts one at disadvantages in life. And you're male, and though you're living in a very rare form of life of being, you know, celibate community member, which is not an esteemed thing within American society, you live right at the cross section of some really hard and interesting power dynamics. And I imagine that's pretty exhausting a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's one of the reasons I feel so exhausted a lot. Right. And I want to rest. My people see me as being very powerful. One of the senior priests in Atlanta, you know, I've been pastor now for 12 years, which is unusual. But whether I have a collar on or a t-shirt on, the world is like, I'm just a Black guy, which is fine, except there's this tension, you know? So it's like, so that's another reason I don't want to revel or get caught up in a kind of a clerical power father held on a high pedestal, you know, blah, 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 because then I get used to that. And that ain't how it is, really. In the reality, it's much more complex.
I think one of the stickiest things, and I don't know, tell me if you resonate with this or not, is that because especially the ecclesiology that you hold is this egalitarian partnership place, I don't want to be over other people. Mm-hmm. And for myself, there's kind of the part of that ecclesiology is sort of in the image of crisis is kind of kenotic. Like, I will let go of my power. I'm not going to push my agenda. I want to be one of the team. I don't want to be over, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily going to advocate for myself strongly. I don't want to be in this. I don't want people to see me at the center of things. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it goes so against maybe coaching that we receive in the professional world around, you know, make sure you get treated justly. Make sure you stand up for yourself. Make sure that you get, you know, you're assertive and you negotiate well for what you're going to get paid if you go speak somewhere and stuff like that. And it's hard for me sometimes as a woman, I want people to stand up for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I know for myself, a lot of my own Christian formation has encouraged me not to do that. I believe in that. Like, I do believe in the kenotic spirituality, the letting go of self. And I don't want to participate in my own abuse, or I don't want other people to model after me and get in situations where I'm watching them and they're like, they're being abused, feeling like they're being, mm-hmm. Does that make sense at all what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you both care for yourself? Knowing that you're at that crossroads, like there are situations where you could really, where you're being diminished by the mm-hmm. system, and at the same time, knowing that you're a person who holds power in an ecclesiology where you want to share that power and be a first, you know, among equals.
I'm still working that out somehow because I want my people to be successful and achieve their goals and have success in their jobs and family life and all those, you know, arenas and stuff. And there is a way to be the servant, to be the person who is healthily self-conscious and aware that there are multiple ways that they can use their power and maybe like to be more creative about that. When I say creative, I mean thoughtful, conscious, present-minded decision-making. Yeah, having some care, asking some questions. Yeah, what I got.
Well, I can understand why you'd be exhausted.
Thank you. It's a lot.
It's
a lot.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Waking Up Goliath, sharing highlights from the interviews I conducted when writing my book, Redeeming Power, Exercising the Gift as God Intended. If you would like more information on the book or are interested in hearing from others I interviewed, please go to my website, annegarrido.com. But let me also nudge you in the direction of Our Lady of Lourdes website, lourdesatlanta.org. I'm sure that it will come as no surprise to you that Jeffrey's parish is drawing so many people that they are in desperate need for a new building and a bigger parking lot. So they've got a capital campaign going on there to which you can contribute. Meanwhile, know I'm praying for you this week as you immerse yourself in the craziness of life and try to be the leader that God has called you to be in this world.